Welcome to Hyperlocal, a podcast dedicated to inspiring economic developers, job creators, and community champions. I'm your host, Mason Ainsworth, and our mission is to bring you real-world stories, proven strategies, and game-changing projects using local solutions and global perspectives. We have had incredible guests on the show, and we're just warming up. Kate Burns Gallagher is a political and economic development powerhouse. From her start as an executive assistant to MP Joe Preston at the Parliament of Canada, to shaping economic development and tourism in the County of Elgin, Kate now leads as executive director of the Western Ontario Wardens Caucus, or WOWC, where she is uniting 15 upper and single-tier municipalities in southwestern Ontario, advocating for their collective interest and supporting the region's 117 municipalities, 1.6 million residents, and over 250,000 businesses. In this episode of Hyperlocal, we dive deep into collaboration and impact, WOWC's mission, members, and key projects, how economic developers can get involved and support WOWC's work, what Kate's hearing from Western Ontario municipalities, discussions on the recent AMO 1 year later report, housing, homelessness, and how rural homelessness is up 30% in the past year, as well as budget pressures. We talk about the critical art of being a bridge between elected officials and staff, with practical tips on early, consistent communication, understanding different perspectives, and collaboration. We even get into advice for entering the municipal and government sectors, top tips, including discussions around with great power comes great responsibility. WOWC's vision for 2026 moving forward, including the upcoming Roma conference next week, and their goals around the vulnerable sector checks, as well as broadband expansion. Now let's get into it. Hi, Kate. Thank you so much for joining me on Hyperlocal today.
Thanks, Mason. Great to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. So we might as well kick it into overdrive. It is the new year with new possibilities, and we're going to have a lot of new stories on the podcast. So I figured we would start off with yours, which is a pretty exciting one. So I was hoping you could tell us a little bit about your origin story and some of your maybe experiences or the experience you've picked up along the way. I know in the past you were an executive assistant at the Parliament of Canada for Joe Preston, as well as have been an economic development coordinator slash manager of economic development and tourism in the County of Elgin, and now are currently in your role as an executive director at the Western Ontario Wardens Caucus. So tell us a bit about your story, kind of how you started off and how you got to where you are and anything interesting along the way.
Well, thanks so much, Mason. And I have to say, this is my first pod, so I'm like super excited. I've done lots of work in TV, but not on podcasts. So thanks so much for the opportunity. Really appreciate it. And who would have thought that, you know, I think it was two edcos ago when you asked for directions at the bottom of the escalator that we'd be on a podcast together. So I'm really excited and thanks for the opportunity.
you know, it's so funny just to jump in there. I was literally thinking that before we started recording and I was like, what are the odds that I like randomly ran into you at EDCO and was like, yeah, hey, I don't really know many people here. And then flash forward at this point in time, I'm now interviewing you and EDCO is kind of on the horizon and it hasn't even been a full year yet. So it's crazy how things can change within a year.
Isn't it? It's pretty exciting. And I love that we're able to talk, you know, at the beginning of the year about what's on tap. So yeah, it's amazing what a year can bring. So yeah, my OG story, my origin story, it's kind of fun in that politics has been a part of who I am, I think, for a long, long time. Ironically, in grade four, I was part of one of those optimist speech contests. If, you know, we were in like a community hall in Dexter, Ontario. If anybody out there knows Dexter, it's like between Union and Sparta in the middle of nowhere, but competed in an optimist speech contest and talked about then international politics. If you can imagine now, you might be able to guess how old I am. I will never tell you, but I talked about international politics. And at that time it was the Iraq War, and what was going on in Kuwait. And so in grade four, you're like 9 years old, and that's what I was talking about. Fast forward a few years, I worked when I was 14 on my first campaign, provincial campaign, which was really cool. And then that's when I kind of got the bug for government and politics in general. So from there, I just volunteered a lot. I volunteered with community organizations whenever I could, just to learn more about our communities. And it was really that volunteering that spurred my career, if you will. So I was volunteering with the St. Thomas Stars Junior B hockey team. Loved hockey. And it was a great opportunity to do a little bit of marketing and communications within the community. And at that time, there was this guy called Joe Preston, who was on the board, who was going to run for MP. So he said to me at that time, he's like, "I like your chops. I like what you do. And if I win, I would like you to be part of my team." So sure enough, he won in 2004, and I joined his team and ended up working with Joe federally as a member of parliament for just shy of 5 years as his executive assistant, which was a remarkable experience. And for anybody who's worked federally and in a constituency office, it's like, I guess, knowledge sharing by fire hose. It's like every day something new and different, and it was an incredible experience. But you do burn out. It's a lot of work. And so I started to burn out there after about 4 years. And then at that time, the county was starting an economic development office, which was incredibly exciting. So I applied for a job there and started as the admin assistant at the county's economic development office at very early years. And that just happened to be in 2008. And if anybody recalls what happened in 2008, that was the world manufacturing was coming to an end in southwestern Ontario. That was the big recession that we saw. Buyouts were happening across Canada and North America. And particularly in Elgin County, we saw the Ford Motor Plant close, and in St. Thomas, lots of companies were closing. So it was an interesting time to enter economic development because I was entering during a crisis. So, but also with every crisis, there's that opportunity, is the flip side of that coin. So it was incredible to join a brand new department at that time. I was with the county for 14 years. And in that time, I was able to work from the admin assistant all the way up to the manager of the department. And it was an incredible time. We had a great team. Incredible support from my manager at the time, Alan Smith, and that team. We did some incredible things and state-of-the-art things. We actually brought the first CIP, countywide CIP, Community Improvement Program, that was vetted by the Ministry of Municipal Affairs and Housing. And now you don't need what we did because legislation has changed, and now you can have countywide CIPs. And then nearing the end of the 14 years at the county, there was an opportunity to take on a secondment. So if you don't know what secondment is, that's and I didn't know what that word was at the time. It was an opportunity to go and try out another job while your boss is kind of leasing you out on the job. And the Elgin County was a member of the Western Ontario Lawrence Caucus at the time, and they were looking to hire somebody to implement their economic development strategy. And so I was encouraged to apply for the job and got it. And so after a couple secondments, the Lawrence Caucus said, "Look, they realize they need somebody full time, and particularly an executive director role." And then that's when I got hired. And it's been, oh my gosh, 4 years since I've been full time as the executive director role. I had a realization it's been 4 years. So that's pretty cool.
Wow. You put the wow in the Western Ontario Wardens Caucus. I gotta say,
Aw,
Kate. That is
thanks.
what a cool story. That's
Yeah.
phenomenal. And I like I've asked a lot of people a similar question. And I like that you went back to when you were a kid. I think that's so cool. Like going all the way back to grade four and being like, hey, like this is kind of how I started out, and that idea of being optimistic about the future. And getting into a competition and then leading, later in life through volunteering and getting involved with the provincial campaign at 14 and and then continuing that journey of giving back, and then that leading to something where you had an opportunity to get involved in different roles. And I love what you said about knowledge sharing by fire hose. For sure, especially when you're in like higher level government, like the amount of information that you get is super overwhelming sometimes, but it is also phenomenal because it gives you a really good insight into how things work. And I know during my time with the province, it was literally like every morning at 7:30 we'd have an issues call, and I'd hear about every single thing going on in the province and each different ministry and like the top things. And I know at the time it's like, oh yeah, like you're up early, you're in these calls. But now it's something I really miss because you literally, like, people would ask me questions. I'm like, oh yeah, I know like exactly how many forest fires are in the province of Ontario today,
Right, like
which
your
is not
finger's on the
funny,
pulse.
but it's like random stuff like that that you would not normally think about. You're just like really hyper into all of the areas and have your pulse on what's going on in different communities around. And it gives you you think about things a bit differently when that happens. So that's thank you for sharing that. You made me really think a lot about different things there.
Oh, thanks.
And then also, I would be really remiss if I didn't mention how cool it is that you were involved with creating the first countywide community improvement plan in Ontario. I think that's something that's phenomenal. I know at Waterloo, something we chat about a lot there in class is community improvement plans. And then I had the pleasure back when I was a city councillor of we implemented a good one in our community, and the results were outstanding. So that you are kind of the architect behind the countywide ones is pretty cool. Like that is something to be super proud of.
Oh, thanks. It was a really cool process. And as economic developers, right, we work a lot with planners, and it gave me a whole new appreciation for the work of planners. And it was an incredible team that I got to work with to build ELG incentives and really build something that had been done before. And full credit to where credit's due, Bruce had this great program. However, it was a little different. And so we had to go down the route of making sure that the ministry was going to approve us so that we can make sure the money flowed. And so, yeah, ELG incentives was pretty exciting and doled out $1 million over the course of its lifetime and saw incredible KPIs.
Wow, that is phenomenal. And for folks who are listening who might not be super ec dev nerds or in government, the key performance indicators are the KPIs. So
Thank you for
yeah,
the
no problem. I just try to make it as accessible as I can for folks, because I know I definitely have been in that boat before, when you go in and you listen to something and you're like, oh, this sounds really cool, but what are they actually talking about? And I know in government we can definitely throw around a lot of acronyms.
It's so
And
true.
even some like high level government people of the province like are like, oh, what are we talking about? Because some of them are exactly the same as others, and it depends what ministry you're in and things like that. Anyways, I digress, but I know we've mentioned a couple times the Western Ontario Wardens Caucus. So I was hoping you could let us know a little bit about that, what it is, who it represents, who's involved, what the caucus actually does. And then also for our listeners, where is that intersection from the caucus and the work that you're doing there into economic development? And are there any key projects that you folks might be working on that relate there?
Yeah, you bet. So the Western Ontario Wardens Caucus, or as I affectionately call ourselves, the WOWC, WOWC, we're a regional table of municipal leadership. So that's the heads of council of our 15 counties, so wardens and mayors, because we do have four single tiers from across Western Ontario. And when I say warden, if you're not from the municipal sphere, it's not a Minecraft warden, as much as my 10-year-old son would love that. He thinks it would be really cool if my wardens were Minecraft wardens, and not wardens of jailers as well. These are wardens that are the head of county government. So when you have a county council, you have all of the mayors from your local municipality sitting around the horseshoe, and then they elect a warden who represents them. So the warden is the leader of that county government, and all of those wardens, and as I mentioned, those four mayors of the single tier counties sit together And collectively, we represent 15 municipal counties and 117 local municipalities across Western Ontario. So we span from Essex County. So that's Windsor is the urban center, but Essex is the county, through to Oxford and Perth, Wellington, Bruce Grey, Huron, all the way up to Simcoe County. So we have a huge swath of Western Ontario that's largely rural and mid-sized regions. So rural and small urban. And we play a huge part in Ontario's economy. So we say our tagline is powering Ontario's economic engine. And really what makes the WOWC unique is that we work together as a region, not as individual municipalities competing against one another, but as a collective. And so the caucus provides a real forum where our leadership can come together to identify those shared priorities, align advocacy, and speak with that one strong coordinated voice, or I like to say, sing from the same songbook, when we're talking to the provincial and federal governments. There's also a really strong staff and partner component to our work too. So we have the 15 CAOs, our 15 economic development managers and directors, our planners, as well as our comms and our government relations folks, all get together quarterly to share information and feed into committees and working groups that really help ground our advocacy in real on the ground experience. And then you asked about what the intersection is with economic development. And I would say it's really central to everything that we do. It's our strategic priorities are housing, infrastructure, workforce, and mental health and addictions. And those are really all about economic infrastructure, all four of those priorities. If our communities can't house workers or move goods or connect digitally, they can't grow. So everything that we are talking about is about our mission at the end of the day to ensure that we have vibrant, growing communities. And so some of the key projects that we're working on to make sure that Western Ontario is vibrant economically, we've been deeply involved in broadband expansion throughout the region. So SWIFT, which is the Southwestern Ontario fiber project. So that's connecting the region with fiber and making sure that our communities have that connectivity. The Warrens Caucus is the umbrella organization for that. We've also in 2022 had a regional workforce strategy that we've implemented with our partners in with Workforce Planning West, and we've seen great success in a lot of the work that has happened out of that workforce strategy. And then right now, we've applied to the Trade Impacted Communities Program to look at a supply chain mapping exercise to better understand the flow of products from Western Ontario, what's coming into the region and what's going out of the region, and where are things coming from and where are they going to? So we can really start to understand that supply chain in Western Ontario. And we want to use that as a pilot project for the rest of the province. So all that to say, I think that the work that we do is really based in economic development. And we, as a whole, the WOWC exists to make sure that Western Ontario isn't treated as an afterthought. Our role is really to take the information we get from all of those subject matter expert teams, so from the economic developers, from the planners and CAOs, and translate what's happening on the ground to real solutions that both the federal and provincial governments can make decisions about and make sound policy about. So we're really trying to make sure that Western Ontario is at the table when decisions are being made.
Wow. It's so funny. It's so funny saying wow there. But honestly, it deserves a wow. It's incredible. Like you're doing all sorts of things. And the cool thing that I think is you're bringing so many unique perspectives to the table. I know you mentioned, you're bringing in some of the wardens, you're bringing in some of the mayors, you're bringing in a whole bunch of like support staff as well, from CAOs to economic developers. And I think that's the thing I see a lot sometimes in different areas of government, where it's, hey, everyone's trying to kind of row in the same direction, so to speak, but it's like siloed, and you're missing some of the key players and the key decision makers. So it's really refreshing and exciting to hear that you bring in everybody to the table and moving forward on these things, and then also doing such substantial projects where it's, hey, we're hoping to be like the example for the rest of the province. I think that is something that's really special, and that kind of loops back to what you said earlier about the CIPs countywide, and kind of showing that, not only at in grade four have you been this optimistic person who wants to push the boundaries and do things differently. You've done that throughout your life multiple times, and this is kind of the next big project in that regard. So I think that's really cool when you would take a step back and look at your journey as a whole, but also some of the work that you're doing right now.
Oh, thanks for that. Yeah, it's really about, as you say, making sure that everybody's at the table, right? Because all those perspectives really lead to the best outcomes, right? Because if you don't have everybody at the table, then you risk not having the best policy or the best legislation at the end of the day. So, yeah, making sure everybody's at the table and having all those perspectives and all as much information as possible, it is the way to having the best outcomes for sure.
Awesome. That is phenomenal. So I know you obviously have a lot of people involved with the work that you're doing right now. I'm curious for maybe some economic developers or other positions out there who are listening to this and are saying like, wow, that sounds phenomenal. Is there a way I can help out? Is there a way that they can get involved in supporting the work that you folks are doing?
Yeah, for sure. So, we're not an anomaly, if you will. There's the Western Ontario Wardens Caucus, then there's the Eastern Ontario Wardens Caucus, then there's something called MARCO, which is the I gotta make sure I get this right. Mayors and Regional Chairs of Ontario. And then there's also Northern Ontario, and then there's the Ontario Big City Mayors. So the joke is, if you have four municipal folks together in a room, they'll make an organization. But there's some really good advocacy groups representing the regions of Ontario. And the biggest way economic developers can get involved is if you're not in Western Ontario, but part of one of those other organizations, if you're in a big city or in Eastern Ontario or Northern Ontario. And there's something bubbling to the surface that when you're doing your business retention and expansion work, when you're doing site visits, if you keep hearing something, you've heard it five, six times, and you're like, this is starting to be a trend. I gotta tell somebody. Tell these groups, let your heads of your council know that you're starting to hear things. Because these are groups are the advocacy groups that are going to be talking to the province and the federal government to raise the red flags on things that are starting to happen that are bubbling to the surface. So if we know about it, then we can get ahead of it before even Queen's Park or Ottawa knows about it, and we can flag these as issues, particularly when it comes to manufacturing or downtowns or anything like that. A couple good examples that we've had in the past 2 years of and quite relevant as of January 1st this year would be the blue box changes. 2 years ago, we had a couple of our counties who were in the early stages of the blue box transition say, look, we're not going to have recycling for commercial and industrial properties, and this is going to be a huge issue, particularly when it comes to landfill, because all of this recycling is going to be diverted to landfill, and it's going to our landfills are going to fill up faster. So what can we do? Let's advocate to the province to find a way to get this blue recycling picked up from our commercial and industrial properties. So 2 years ago, we started work on this. We worked with the Minister of the Environment's office. We were sending some letters. We attempted to get some delegations as well. However, unfortunately, we weren't able to get a solution to the problem. So right now, commercial industrial properties are not having recycling pickup. That's a case where it was unfortunate we didn't see a change. On the flip side of that, also about 2, maybe 3 years ago, We had a couple counties talking about the leave to construct threshold. So this is if you're coming into Ontario and you're going to be putting up a new industrial site and there's not natural gas at that site and you need to get natural gas to your site, you would have to pay for the pipe to get to your site. If the cost of that pipe was over $2 million, that to get to your site, then it would automatically have to go to the Ontario Energy Board for approval. All the other provinces had a minimum of $10 million threshold. So we were at a real disadvantage when it came to attracting investment to Ontario, because as soon as these leave to constructs went to the Ontario Energy Board, it would take 24 months in some cases to get approval to get this natural gas to these industrial sites. So we worked with our partners, we worked with Enbridge, we worked with the province to get this leave to construct threshold increased. And after about 2 years of advocacy, we were able to get that $2 million threshold increased to $10 million. So now when companies are coming into Ontario, if they need to get natural gas to their site, as long as it's under $10 million of cost to get that pipe to their site, it doesn't need to go to the OEB for approval. So huge impact for investment in Ontario across the board. And we were so pleased to be able to spearhead that advocacy. So it goes to show that the biggest way economic developers really can support our work or the work of any of the organizations like us is staying connected. Share what you're seeing or what you're hearing, and let us know what's happening on the ground. So that we can flag it and raise it, and advocate on your behalf.
Very cool. I think when I look at all the different levels of government, and I think, everyone would probably agree for the most part, but local government is the closest boots on the ground to hearing those little things, because the reality is you're around all the time, right? Like, hey, you're at work, and then you go for lunch, and you go to a little restaurant downtown or something, and then you run into a business owner, and then they tell you about, oh, hey, like, do you have a second to chat? And they tell you about an issue that's going on, or you're dealing with the company who wants to come into your specific community, and getting those examples. So I think that's phenomenal and great advice to bring that forward to the different organizations who are already doing this advocacy, just to keep them involved, because, as you know, especially working for the federal government, it's sometimes it's so removed that it's difficult to get those specific examples, and those really go a long way in regards to making some of these substantial changes, like i.e. Changing that threshold from 2 million to 10 million probably took like some hard work and examples and stories behind that of communities that were experiencing some of the issues around that probably helped a lot with getting that passed.
Yeah, exactly. And we were able to use those concrete examples from our local economic developers, right? Of investments we lost because of the low threshold. And we wouldn't have been able to do that without the boots on the ground, the people, the economic developers and the municipal governments, that, as you say, are the government closest to the people.
Yeah, I love that. And just to kind of wrap the federal side, I know you were chatting a bit about Joe earlier, but this member that we had way back in the day, Doug Lewis, when I first got elected to City Council way back in 2014, as a young lad, he sat down with me, and one of the things he said to me really stands out in my mind. He says, you got to go out and kick the tires. And I always thought that was the coolest thing for somebody who's elected, that they actually go and like boots on the ground and see what's going on in their communities, so that they have that perspective. So I think that's good. And I just wanted to, you mentioned in there, people bringing forward perspectives and a little bit about, bringing what you're hearing forward. And I was curious, what are you hearing right now, from different municipalities in the West? Is there any like key kind of issues at the moment? I know obviously we're in a trade war with the United States, so that probably is coming up a lot. But any specifics, feel free to share.
Yeah, thanks. So 2026 is going to be a tough year. That's what we're hearing. Not just because it's a municipal election, which always is an interesting time for those of us working in the municipal sphere, but also because of budgets. The budgets are being stretched. There's strains on the municipal budgets and the front line that we haven't experienced in before, to be quite frank. Earlier this week, AMO, so the Association of Municipalities of Ontario, released a report 1 year later on homelessness. And so in 2025, there were 85,000 people that were homeless in the province of Ontario. Now, why does that matter to economic development, and why does that matter to us? It's because homelessness is a key economic development issue. Economic really growth depends on people. It depends on workers being able to live near their jobs and get to work reliably and stay healthy. And when people don't have access to stable housing, it becomes incredibly difficult to participate in the workforce, right? So, whether that's holding down a job or going to school and upgrading your skills, or even just showing up to work consistently, if you don't have a home to go to, that makes everything else in your life difficult. And for employers, especially in sectors like manufacturing and healthcare and construction and agri-food, our top sectors in the West, the lack of housing is really now one of the biggest barriers to growth. So that's what we're starting to hear, right? Is that, and it's been an ongoing issue, is that lack of housing, but it's the deeply affordable housing. It's housing that is affordable to our workforce. And the homelessness issue also affects investment. So when companies are deciding to locate or expand, they look at more than just land and infrastructure. They're looking at housing availability and community stability, and where municipalities have the capacity to support and grow. And the persistent homelessness is also a signal that since systems are under strain, Ontario is the only province where municipalities are responsible for social services. So those budgetary strains are even more highlighted, or even higher here in Ontario on our municipalities here.
And then there's also the cost issue, right? So because of those budgets, we don't have enough housing. We end up spending far more on emergency responses. So with shelters, policing, paramedics, hospital visits, and justice services across the board. So and though it's more expensive to deal with the emergency responses than being preventative. So every dollar that's tied up in crisis response is a dollar that's not being able to be invested in infrastructure or workforce development or economic growth. Then we're also seeing the impacts on our downtowns and our main streets, where small businesses and even tourism locations have individuals that are seeking shelter in, their covered awnings and those sorts of things. So when municipalities are really stuck managing crisis after crisis, it affects foot traffic and business confidence and long-term revitalization efforts. So homelessness, it is a huge issue and is growing. That report that AMO released on Monday talked about rural homelessness was up 30% over last year. So it's not something that's going to go away overnight, and it's something that we need to address. And as economic developers, we have to realize and look at that homelessness is not just a social crisis. It really impacts our growth as a province and as communities. It affects our workforce and our regional competitiveness, because at the end of the day, housing stability is really economic infrastructure. Well said. And it is really sad. And wow, 30%, that is a staggering number. I'm gonna have to look through AMO's report on that and go a bit more in depth. But it's one of those things, and it's interesting when we look at some of the sayings from the past. And I just one really comes to my mind when you're saying about how we need to invest in these things and the preventative costs. And something my dad used to say, he said, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And that really goes straight to, in my mind, to like the cost, right? Because a lot of people, and especially when I was in politics, they'd complain about, oh, we're putting money into this, yada, yada. But it's okay. Well, if you think about it from, like, if you just went strictly financial without thinking about people as people, which, people actually need to do and treat people like humans and have more humanity in their lives, I think the world would be a much better place. But if you take all of that out and you just look at the numbers, like, it's just logical, right? Like, you save so much money in the long term if you actually deal with some of these things. And then it leads to like a lot more prosperity. And anyways, I could do a whole, we could do a whole podcast on
Oh,
that.
same. Yeah.
But yeah, no, I really appreciate you bringing that up and those perspectives. And I'm glad that people have been mentioning that and beating the drum. And yeah, we're entering in a unique year. And for anyone who is listening, make sure you vote in the 2026 election and make sure you ask candidates those difficult questions about, hey, yeah, it's great that you're, saying that you support this, but what are you actually going to do about it? Like, how are you going to make some of these things move forward in the right direction? Because it is a big year, and I don't just think for us here in Ontario, but just as a country. So when we have these opportunities to have the hard conversations with people who are going to be making the decisions, we need to make sure we're involved in that process.
Yeah.
Okay, on a more positive note,
Yes.
because I feel like we got a little intense there.
We did.
Definitely, I know I feel a lot of emotions going through the body right now, and that's okay because it's these are intense intense subjects for sure. And I know personal one to me. Jumping to a different gear, the importance of bridging the divide between elected officials and staff. In your role, you deal with a ton of elected officials from around the province, not just at the municipal level, but obviously provincially and federally as well. I'm curious for anybody out there who wants to have better relationships with elected officials and have a more maybe productive relationship. Some of the things that you've picked up along the way, whether it be from your time with the federal government or in the municipal sector, or even now in your position, and how you think we can work on developing those re relationships, whether it's on, the staff side or on the elected side as well, and how everybody can work better together.
Yeah, it's such a great question. And honestly, I think this is probably the hardest one, right? But also it's a little bit more intuitive. Relationships are really at the core of everything that we do, right? When you're talking about advocacy and government relations and bridging that divide, and I don't know if it's necessarily a divide between elected officials and staff, but making that bridge between the two, between elected officials and staff, particularly in the municipal world, well, in government as a whole, right? As staff, we are trained. Our background is to be risk averse. We don't want to take risk. We want to protect the taxpayer dollar, and so we are risk averse. Where the elected officials perhaps would be are a little bit more attuned to risk, they're a little bit more comfortable with risk. So when you're working with elected officials and staff, you've got to find that comfort level of risk, I would say, which is, I would argue, is a little bit different than the private sector, where risk is, I don't know, I've actually never worked in the private sector, so I can't say. But my husband who does, risk is looked at differently. So I would say the factors in effect of local government is really that relationship between elected officials and municipal staff, and how we come together from those different perspectives, right? From the risk perspective. Councillors and mayors and wardens are accountable to the voters and deal with urgency, right? So the public pressure and the public re political realities, they're always worried about being reelected if they're going to be running again. Where staff are accountable for implementation. So that's the legislation, the budgets, the long-term sustainability. And while neither perspective is wrong, they aren't necessarily a lot aligned, right? So you need that, as you say, that bridge. So when decisions get made without understanding what's actually possible, staff can kind of feel constantly like they're reacting, and elected officials kind of feel like they're being constrained or frustrated. So then you can see that divide start to happen. And that's when you don't want to divide. So to make sure that that bridge is there and really strong. You want to respect each other's perspectives, if you will. So council sets the direction and staff implements. But really the best outcomes happen in the overlap where there's really early dialogue, honest conversation. When you're reaching out and you're talking ahead of any reports that go ahead to the council table or on an agenda, but it's that early and consistent conversation, building that relationship, having that trust so that you can pick up the phone or send the text or send the email. When you start to hear of something happening early, in the example of the blue box, right? You've heard from five or six folks, you know, that they're concerned about their recycling and they're just gonna have to divert to the landfill. Let your elected officials know that this is a concern and that that's something you're starting to hear. If you have downtown businesses that are concerned with the number of folks that they're seeing every morning in their covered doors, let your elected officials know. So really walking that bridge and making sure that your elected officials know what's happening in their communities, what you're hearing, before it makes it onto that council agenda. So it's about that open communication. It's about making sure that both sides understand where they're coming from and trying to look at it from the other person's perspective. So trying to understand that the elected official has a different lens when they're beholden to the voter, and then also understanding that staff have that are beholden to, you know, the risk. So I think it's all about that communication piece and just making sure it happens early and as often as possible.
Great advice. I think that's phenomenal, Kate. And having a unique view on it from like being elected with my time in council and involved and such. And then when I met my wife, she was a CAO and now is a deputy CAO in a different municipality. So we constantly have this conversation. We always talk about that the relationships between council and staff and you know ways to make that better and kind of the best approaches. And you covered a lot of the stuff there. And one thing I wanted to highlight that you said for folks is you know the idea of the bridge. And I think it's really important to be the bridge. And what I mean by that is a lot of the times. And especially on the elected side, we have folks, and you know, being in 2026 in an election year, there's probably going to be a lot of new people who come in, and a lot of them probably, you know, I don't want to be mean or overstate things, but probably a lot of them don't know anything about local government or how it works or about economic development or any of these other subjects, because it's such a wide topic, right? Like you could literally talk about anything from like school crossing guards to like a cat peeing on a lawn to like all these other weird little things along the way, and to some serious things like water treatment. So it's important to, you know, as you mentioned, have that perspective of, hey, you know, we're all looking at this from a different lens, and then being patient with folks, but also having those, you know, early and consistent communications and helping develop some of that knowledge, and then you know, having that explanation ready of, hey, you know, yeah, you might not have heard of this before. I remember one example, and I love going to this one, but it's a retro reflectometer. Do you know what
Oh,
that is?
no, I'm learning something new.
Oh,
Share.
this is great. I don't know if Andrew Shell will ever listen to this podcast, but he was one of our staff at the City of Orillia for Environmental Services, and he constantly brought up this item in budget, and it was a retro reflectometer. And so I talked to him one day and I said, hey, like, you know, I see you have this in the budget. Can you tell me a bit more about it? And because I had no clue what that was. And basically, it is a little gun and you shine it to signs, like a stop sign or a different sign, and it measures how reflective the sign is. And the reason that's important is it has to maintain a specific standard of reflection for lights to be able to hit it. And if it doesn't, people can like challenge that or whatever in court if like an accident happens or something, because it's supposed to be up to a certain standard. And so I brought that up at budget and I explained it and unfortunately didn't get passed for a few years, but then eventually we got it for him in the department and it was like, oh, that's so great. But it was because he took the time to explain what that was because, you know, as you didn't know, like I had no clue either. And so hopefully we taught some folks today what a retro reflectometer was and the importance of having good relationships between staff and elected officials and being the bridge.
Being the bridge. I love that.
Okay, hopping a little bit into the future, advice for new folks who want to enter the municipal sector or maybe a different sector in government, what advice would you have for them? Maybe like a top three.
Top three. Ooh. So I guess, well, Spider-Man, right? With great responsibility, or with great power comes great responsibility, right? So, and some people wouldn't think that working in government is great power, as a staffer or behind the scenes, but there's a lot of power in working within government, and a lot of responsibility that you have to take with that, and particularly in municipal government, right? We talked about how municipal government is the government closest to the people. And it really is. From the time you wake up in the morning and you turn on the water to brush your teeth, the time you go to bed and you turn out the lights, municipal government is the government that makes your day happen. The roads, the water, the public safety, the park you play in. Municipal government is the government closest to the people. And so if you're thinking of entering municipal sector or the government sector, understand that, you know, the decisions that are being made at the local level really affect every single day of people's lives, right? And that's really meaningful, and it, but also can come with real pressure. So don't take it lightly. I would say, so that would be number one. Number two, take the time to learn how the system actually works. So if it's a retroreflectometer, government isn't slow because people don't care. It's slow because it has to balance, right? It has to be that bridge. It has to balance accountability, legislation, risk, public trust. So if you don't understand it early on, you'll be far more, if sorry, if you understand it early on, you'll be far more effective and far less frustrated. So really learn the system and learn the why, because it's not necessarily slow just to be slow. It's to make sure that there's accountability and to make sure that everybody's at the table and every voice is heard. And then third, well, I think we talked about it quite a bit. The third would be those relationships and communication. So build the relationships and communicate with those relationships early and often. Your success in the municipal sphere and in the government sector is all about the trust and collaboration you will build with people in your world, as just as much as technical skills you have. So talk to people across departments, talk to people in planning, talk to people in engineering, learn from one another, respect the people who have been there a long time and try and get as much from them as humanly possible. And be curious. Ask the questions, because the only way you can learn is to ask the questions. So I think those would be my top three.
I love that. Those are phenomenal answers. Thank you. Thank you so
Right
much,
on.
Caden. And I like it. It's funny because, you know, folks don't really hear our preamble before we start recording, but that's one of the things we talked about was being curious and asking questions.
Yeah.
And so I think that's so funny that that got looped in there. But yeah, and I love, you know, I was thinking this in my mind, and I don't mean to put you on the spot or call you out because I was like, oh yeah, like it's obvious that Kate's a political nerd from your time as a kid to now. But I didn't want to say that. But now that you made a Spider-Man reference, I gotta say, like, super nerd. I love it. I'm also a super nerd, and there's a lot of us out there. The more and more I get into economic development, the more I find similar-minded folks who are a little, let's just say, abstract, to be more positive. And there's a lot of folks from different areas, and a lot of creative folks, and I think a lot of that comes down to like just being a nerd at heart, and having that curiosity for different things, and I think that's why we like some of those universes so much.
Right. Well, thank you. And I take nerd as he's a huge compliment. So thank you.
Awesome. That is great to hear. So I know we're coming near the end. We only got a couple questions left for you. So one is the vision of the future for the Western Ontario Wardens Caucus, and specifically, I believe that next week it starts, which is the Rural Ontario Municipal Association Conference. And fun fact, back when ROMA and OGRA, the Ontario Good Roads Association, were one big conference, that's actually where I met my wife. So very cool conference, lots of great information, lots of great people, and you might meet your future partner there. So definitely highly recommend checking out ROMA or OGRA. It was a little sad when they separated, but hey, politics is a thing sometimes, and that's okay. But what's the plan for ROMA? Is there anything specifically that you're looking for to get out of it?
Okay, that is such a fun fact. Number one, I love that. So we are heading into ROMA with a fresh new vision, and a little bit different. We've gone, and anybody who's gone to one ROMA or AMO conferences knows that it's full of delegations. I mean, you shake a hand, you talk for 15 minutes with the minister, they knock on the door, and you're out the door. So it's a flurry of activity. So this year we have two really specific delegations. We're going to talk about vulnerable sector checks because it's impacting our workforce, and we're going to talk about broadband connectivity and cell gap coverage. So only two delegations, really specific, but we're having a reception on the Monday evening where we've partnered with Bruce Power because we're powering Ontario's economic engine in the West to meet with ministers in a less formal setting. So we're bringing together all of our partners in Western Ontario with Bruce Power to meet with the ministers to talk about our key strategic priorities and to show that we really are working as a region, that we're building those relationships with our huge partners, Bruce Power Nuclear Innovation Institute. And that, we're working as a region to shape the future, not just respond to it. That, we are here, we're home to manufacturing, agri-food, energy, and a growing innovation economy. And that the challenges we're facing, when you flip that coin, are just are opportunities in disguise. So our future success really depends on how well we work together across the counties, across the sectors, and across government. So for us, WOWC, our future vision, it's really about making sure that we are that go-to. So when government needs insight and knowledge on policy and legislation, that they pick up the phone and call us to make sure that we're at that table and that we bring all of those voices that we've had at the table to those larger tables. So the future for us is really about leadership, collaboration, and our collective impact to make sure that Western Ontario voice is not only heard, but really shapes the decisions that will define not just the region, but the province for many years to come.
Sounds like a very exciting ROMA conference ahead for you folks, and wishing you all the best success in that. I really love, and I'm going to use this quote in the future, what you said, we're working to shape the future, not just respond to it. I think that's awesome. That is so cool and really speaks volumes to the work that you folks are doing. So thank you for that work, first of all. And I have a fun question that's off the beaten path for you. We have a tradition when we close off the podcast. We have a little mystery question, and that can kind of come of different forms. Today, I decided to draw inspiration from New Year's because, it's January, we're into the new year. There's a lot going ahead, and I have a guy. I haven't met him in person yet, but we've connected through LinkedIn, and he had an interesting post the other day. The guy's name is Mark Champagne. And he's over in Collingwood, does some cool stuff there. Also an author, just to do a shameless plug for him. Personal Socrates, really interesting book. It has a ton of questions in there. And he asked this question on his LinkedIn, and I responded to it. And I'll tell you my answer in a second. But the question, to give you some time to think about it, is what is your word slash intention for this year ahead? And so when I answered it for him, I said metamorphosis, which sounds like a little intense, but the intention is to, take this year as kind of, I know this sounds super nerdy and a little weird, but like, cocooning like a butterfly and
I
to
totally thought of a
really,
butterfly when you said it.
yeah, and adding in like those nutrients and that knowledge and these experiences so that when I come out on the other side, that it's like, hey, I'm so different because I've, learned these things or I've had these experiences or I've attended these events and just really becoming, I'm happy with myself, but also want to kind of take things to the next level. So that's what I put for him. So I'm curious, your answer.
Ooh, I love that. I saw the butterfly right away when you said that word. Isn't that fun? So what would my word be for the year? I immediately thought, so I'm going to say the first word that came to my mind, pardon me, is collaboration. And not just for work, but for life, right? And why? Because we need to, we can't live in a silo, whether it's in at work or in our personal lives. We can't be the island. And so we need to collaborate with everybody around us. So it's about having those relationships. It's about talking to the person beside you. It's about sharing. It's about communicating. And I say collaboration because, I mean, we especially in winter, and today, we're under like a foot and a half of snow. The tendency is to want to cocoon away and stay close to yourself and
Cocoon away. I like that. That's
right
very punny.
and want to stay within, but collaboration forces you to talk to other people and reach out. And as we head into Roma next week, it's all about collaboration. And that's what I love too, going into Roma particularly. It is rural Ontario. It's all about talking. It's all about working together. And I don't know if it's different in urban versus rural, but in rural, I find it's those the collaboration is where the beautiful things happen, where we find the solutions to our problems by talking it out. So yeah, I think collaboration would be my word for this year, is just talking it out and trying to find the solutions to those problems and working with people next to you.
Amazing. Well, for the folks listening, make sure you collaborate with some new folks this year. This is the year of collaboration, as Kate has said. And I just wanted to say thank you so much for joining me on Hyperlocal today and taking the time to collaborate with me today.
Thank you, Mason. I felt this. I felt a metamorphosis by the end.
I love it. I love it. Thank you so much. Thank you for joining us on Hyperlocal. Real stories, real impact, local solutions, and global perspectives. If today sparked an idea, share it with your network and tag us. If you love today's conversation, hit subscribe, leave a review, and share it with that one person who needs to hear it. Thank you so much, and let's keep the momentum going.